Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we talk about the national championship game, Kyle Korver's letter. We'll also talk to NBA agent Bill Duffy for Baseline, our special about the Supermax extension. But first, I feel like some people are looking at me kind of as a hater. Not entirely as a hater, but somewhat sort of as a hater. And I mean, that game wasn't good. It ultimately turned out to be close. But I did not find that game to be entertaining. And look, if you found that game to be entertaining, then good for you. I personally wish that my threshold for being entertained was as low as yours. I'd be having a whole lot more fun. But it did the job for you. I am not telling you that you were wrong. I am going to say, though, that from where I'm sitting, that wasn't high-quality basketball, man. And the reason why it wasn't high-quality basketball is pretty simple. Those weren't high-quality basketball players. Who we got that we like are like, yo, that guy's going to be in the NBA. Gabe, well, we got Culver and DeAndre Hunter. Do you have anybody else that you look at and you're like, yeah, that dude's going to the league?
No.
Not a one. Like, that is just what we wound up with. We've had a few national championship games that have kind of put us in this place where we're looking at dudes like, yo, man, I may never think about this dude ever again in my life. And that was what our national championship game was. The first 10 minutes were terrible. And I've heard people say, well, like, after the first 10 minutes, it got better. It did. Well, what the hell else was this supposed to do, number one? But the first 10 minutes are kind of defining, man. Let me tell you this. Think about your favorite album. I bet track one is smoking. It helps. It affects the way we feel about the rest of it. And that game, yeah. Didn't really do the job for me. And, you know, there's kind of a simple solution to this, man. Let's get some more money into this, right? Like, you tell me what you think, Gabe. I was out there watching that, and I was like, wow, that looks like a matchup of two teams who got their players the honest, old-fashioned way. Like, how shocked would you be to find out that anybody paid $50,000 to get any of those dudes to go to their school?
Kyle's guy doesn't look like a bag man.
No. Even if he was, man, he don't play like he worth the money. You know, I mean, they're a very well coached team. Congratulations to Virginia and all that stuff. I hope nobody thinks that they should play like them in order to win a championship, but whatever. But no. Them cats, that game looked like a battle between fair and square. That's who was matched up in that game. And I don't know about you, man, but I kind of like to see a matchup of some teams that had a higher payroll.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about the NBA, NFL, MLB, any professional league, typically the teams that are in the championship every year have the highest payroll and the best players.
There we go. Avenatti out here trying to blow up Zion's spot. I told you that was how I was going to play, right, didn't I? I told you that the only leverage he had was Zion's stuff, and he's just finding out that nobody really care about Zion. But he out there trying to come out there with Zion, trying to say that Zion was out here taking his money or whatever. I'm just saying, who was the biggest attraction in college basketball this year? That's right, Zion. I feel like the NCAA tournament, have you ever, bitch, I ain't never thought about this before, huh? The NCAA tournament, you know what it should have? It should have a salary floor. That you got to invest a certain amount in your roster, otherwise you're not allowed to go to the Sweet 16. Like, we can't be taking the risk of having you coming on at 9:20 p.m. We can't roll the dice on that. That's not correct. That's not what the game should be. Yeah, we need to get a little bit more bread out here in this game, and thereby we might have some more entertaining stuff that's going on. Because, look, everybody that makes the argument that the players should not be paid, I'm being dead serious about this. Look at what the game was last night. Even if you managed to enjoy that game, you enjoyed that game purely because of the stakes. Like, if I take that same exact basketball game that you got and I remove the stakes, there's nothing really memorable about it because you didn't have memorable players. That's just not what you're going to get now, seemingly at the end of the NCAA tournament. Like, that's not what it's going to be. And if they get rid of this one and done rule, oh, kiddos, it's not going to get any better. It's not. And so, like, if you think that players don't matter, if you think that people only care about the jerseys, tell me you wouldn't care if the players were a little bit better. Like, this is one of those, like, when I was a kid sort of situations that I kind of have to go to. And I feel like I'm at a fairly unique age in the sense that I have clear recollection of when we were basically positive that everybody was going to stay in school for 4 years. And then I have very clear recollections of that changing to go into more guys coming out of high school to then having the rule change in 2005. 2005 was the last time high school players could go in to the draft. But then leading to where we are right now. And the thing is, high level college basketball prior to, I'd really call it 1995, you just had more like relative adults. You know, like you had guys that were 21, 22 years old who had played for years that you had a certain measure of familiarity with, that the rivalries felt different because the rivalries weren't simply about the schools themselves, but also had more to do with the individual players. Like, that's just not what this is right now. It's not that. Like, think about this for a second. In 1990, UNLV won the national championship. They had a junior point guard, junior small forward, junior power forward, junior center, and a sophomore shooting guard. They all came back. Like, they lost that next year to Duke. Leitner was a junior. Hurley was a junior. Grant Hill doesn't come back in this new world. Like, they all came back. Like, there's no way to argue that college basketball now is a superior product to what it was 20 years ago, or even, I would argue, 15. And even 15, you had a lot of guys that were coming straight out, like, at that point. But, like, yesterday was just, like, a bunch of dudes playing basketball. Like, it looked like high-level pickup. And that's no shade to the guys that are out there. That's no shade to the coaches, right? I mean, they are all very, very good, obviously. But it was just pretty unremarkable. And that's what I think gets us to where we were with Zion this year, kind of the fascination that everybody had, was that if nothing else, man, that dude was remarkable. And we've had, like, individual guys that were remarkable on the way. Even along this way in the last 10, 12 years or so, we've had remarkable teams. But that's not what, I don't know if that, like, that part of things is going to continue. I don't see that. Like, the game has just changed. And this is a big part of where the game has changed. And it's because, look, the money in the NBA is so much more than it ever was before. That playing for the money is a better risk than it was back in the day. It is also worth noting, and I think this part gets forgotten, is that there are now 30 teams in the NBA, not like 22 or 23. You know, there are more jobs out there that guys are shooting for. More people shooting for the jobs, but more jobs nonetheless. But the game used to be for players that ball was your ticket to college. Like, college was the destination. Everything on top of college was gravy, but it was an opportunity for cats to go in and get an education, get a good job, you know, all that stuff right there. But that used to be where people were aiming. That's not where people aim anymore, man. People aim for the NBA, and the stakes have gotten so high. They're aiming for the NBA, like, before these kids turn 10 years old. Like, that's where this game starts now. They have to aim that early because the competition is that strong. And so, like I've always said, and again, this is now dialing back because the competition of the game has changed, but the day that it becomes like professional for these kids is the day that you have them start going to these different schools just to be on the basketball team. Right? Like, once you start sending them to prep school, like, I had a dude who played ball who told me that one time. He's like, yeah, them prep school kids, they're ready to get out as soon as possible. Because this already been a job. They just been doing it for free, right? Like they know what time it is. They know what the priority is. They ain't in here worried about going to school. They're trying to get to the league ASAP. That is where they're trying to go. And that's what this is, man. Like, the step of college, or the idea of going to college, man, that ain't no different than going to Oak Hill or any of these other little schools that these cats stopped off at. It's just not. And so what we do ultimately wind up with, though, is we get to the end, and being a grown-up matters. Like, having experience on your team matters just for the physicality of it and the ability to stay composed. Like, maturity matters. And so what we're going to wind up with in these championship games is like a lot of experienced teams. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. You have a program like North Carolina, for example, that's basically been living off of low-tier, low five stars. And those are guys that generally stay in school for a long time. So it's pretty cool, and they're pretty fun to watch. And, you know, you get to know them a little bit as they go through and all that stuff, right? And they got a chance to win. Gonzaga is operating in that same space, and they're like, when you get a chance to watch Gonzaga, it's fun to watch. Like, if you had another Gonzaga UNC game tonight, that game, that would have been cool, I guess, you know. But teams aren't remarkable. Like that 2017 North Carolina team. I mean, how much you remember that team? Now that 09 or that 05 team, oh, you remember those. You remember those, the old heads in the house. You remember the 82, you know, 93. That was actually a fairly unremarkable team, though. I think they went like 33-4. But anyway, like, you go through the – and so with Duke, like, at least Duke's team this year, they had problems. They had flaws that were going to make it where they couldn't win a single elimination tournament, man. But they were a remarkable team. There's something to be said there. College basketball was really short this year on remarkable teams. Like, Virginia's a champion, but they're not a remarkable team. North Carolina's not a remarkable team. Texas Tech, they're really good, but they're not a remarkable team. Even that Gonzaga team, right? I mean, they're not remarkable. Like, Duke, I guess, is the only one. Where everybody else, put it like this, there's no other team out there that you would remember if they didn't win the national championship, if you didn't have, like, some personal investment in that team, or you, like, really, really, really pay attention to the conference that they were in. That's where we are. That's what the game is. And I'm just saying, man, like, y'all claim y'all love college basketball. If y'all love college basketball, man, we can fix this problem with a little bit of cash. It ain't got to be NBA money. Them cats, look, it's not a good idea to go to the NBA at 18 years old. Like, I think we all agree that that's probably not the best idea for your own development. You're skipping some steps here. It'd probably be better if you go to college. Like, there's a win that comes from taking a year in college. College winds up being your gate. What they call it? Is it a gap year?
Well, I mean, gap year is kind of like what kids take when they want to, like, go do a Euro trip financed by their either one, mommy and daddy, or two, them working at a hotel or working right at a restaurant all high school.
Yeah, and that's basically what these guys are doing when they go to college.
Yeah.
Like Zion did a gap year. He just did it in college.
I've never heard it described as such, and that is spot on.
That's what it is, except it's a gap year where it's not like you go have a little fun. I'm sure he had a lot of fun, but you know what I mean. Like that's what that is, man. Let's put together a GoFundMe for these gap years. If we put together a GoFundMe to get Zion to play one more year at Duke, I bet we could come up with a lot of money. I bet we could. I don't know if we could come up with as much as Avenatti say Nike paying. Notice I couched that in what Avenatti say. I don't know. But, like, that's what we need to do, man. If that's what we need to do to get a little better college basketball, I'm down. I'm here for it. Let's rock. Because I was watching that game, and I was like, the Virginia guys have been around a while, so I'm fairly familiar with them. Gabe, I was watching Texas Tech, and I was like, I don't know anything about any of you guys. Like, you know what's going to be the most memorable thing to me about Texas Tech's team? You see they got that dude from Wakanda?
I saw you tweeting about that, and I was fascinated to hear your thoughts.
Texas Tech got a white dude with a long part in his hair, and he from a town called Wakanda. Wakanda, Illinois. And I swear on everything that Jim Nance knew exactly what he was doing, because every time he said Wakanda, he said, from Wakanda, Illinois. He take a pause. Like, so Jim Nance might have a little more of a sense of humor than we're giving him credit for having. But I look up and it said Wakanda, and it was that dude, and I had to look it up, and that Wakanda is 90% white. And it's actually funny because I said something like, I'm not sure if those people understand why that is hilarious, though apparently when the movie came out, they got a lot of prank calls and stuff. But anyway, some dude got mad and retweeted, yeah, only people in the cities know what's going on. Nah, man, I'm not saying that they don't know what's going on because they don't live in the city. I'm saying I don't know if that's the type of community that's going to go see a movie called Black Panther. I don't care how much they love the comics. Ain't everybody going to see that. They might think it's about something else. You never know. It might be a bunch of old people. You think old people trying to go see the Huey Newton story? They do not. I don't know what kind of emails they getting. FW:FW:FW:, and then it explains that in reality, T'Challa is Eldridge Cleaver. If they wanted to read Soul on Ice, they would have done it by now. And in this day and age, people get fooled very easy by propaganda. We'll be back to talk about Kyle Korver in a minute, but first, the average interest rate on credit card debt is over 18% APR. Whew, that is high. Have you looked at your interest rate lately? Refinance your high interest credit card balances and save with a credit card consolidation loan from LightStream. Get a rate as low as 6.14% APR with AutoPay. The rate is fixed. It will never go up. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000 and there are no fees. Even get your money as soon as the day you apply. When you have good credit, you deserve great service and a low interest fixed rate loan from LightStream. That's lending uncomplicated. Want to save even more? My listeners get an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to LightStream.com/Bomani. LightStream.com/Bomani. Subject to credit approval, rate includes a 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit LightStream.com/Bomani for more information. Hey, man, Kyle Korver broke out the Chopperino on the Players Tribune. He wrote, the piece is really interesting. I find the piece that Kyle Korver wrote to be interesting on so many levels. And for those who have not read it, I think that you should. And it's kind of him coming to terms with like some realizations about race in America and, you know, the things that he's picked up and what he feels is important is that, you know, he is a person of a privileged class is opting into this conversation and that he has to be willing to listen in this conversation. And he also has to be willing to do things that to like actively fight, like to fight racism. You got to actively fight against it. It's not some kind of passive activity that you're going to engage in. And the thing is, the clarity of his language is what struck me. Like there was no dancing around it. Like when he talked about racism, he called it racism. He made references to slavery. White folks lose their minds when you talk about slavery. I don't know how many times he had to say slavery in the mirror before he could go sit down on a computer and write it out, but he did. Like he came with it and he started by explaining, and this I actually found to be very interesting. He started by explaining that when Thabo Sefolosha got jammed up by the cops in New York and had his ankle broken, and Korver heard the story about him getting jacked up. He was like, I know this guy, you know, and he's one of the most interesting people I've ever met. He went through all the things he knew about him and how he felt. And he was like, but my first thought was, why was he out late at night? Like, even about a person that he knew, his first thought was that that person must have done something wrong. And I really, like, I was blown away by the idea that he copped to that because he didn't have to do that. Like, nothing that he did or nothing that he wrote, he didn't have to do any of that. And most people, when they approach these things, try to approach them from a standpoint of superiority. And he came about it in the way that I think is probably the most effective, which is by explaining his fallibility off the top and then going from there. Like, I really, really think you ought to check it out. I thought it was really interesting. And hey, man, Gabe, I felt like there's a chance. I was like, he might mess around and get booed at home.
Especially the portion where he talked about how they had a closed doors meeting with the owner.
Yeah.
And all of the players chimed in and basically said, you know, shared their own stories about difficulties that they've had and fears that their families have had.
Yeah, and they were low-key talking about their own building.
Yes, exactly. Their own building, their own fans, the community that they live in.
Yeah, like Korver, I mean, Korver put it all out there. He said the things that I felt the owner wasn't willing to say in public. Right? Because the owner, and we talked about this before, the owner, it's hard to talk about racism without hurting some white folks' feelings. And people will do anything they can not to hurt white folks' feelings when it comes time to talk about race. We got to make sure. And even Korver, in his piece, it should be noted, made sure to do this. You know, like, hey, man, I'm not saying it's your fault. Like, you always got to preface it with that. Otherwise, you ain't got no chance. Now, Korver did it in a very interesting way where he basically said, Should you feel guilty for the sins of your forefathers? No. Are you responsible for them? Yes. Like, that's a pretty profound statement to make, but it is still operating in the tradition of you can't really be out here hurting these folks' feelings. And I thought that the owner, you know, like, we are not a racist community. Don't tell me, man. They got a show. And this was a lot stronger of a message than that. And I joke about him getting booed at home, but there's some people who are not happy. Like, let's get that part clear right now. There are some people who are not really trying to hear this. And I think you have to be careful in ways on both sides about how to receive the Twitter reception. One, because Twitter skews a little bit more to the left and younger in its users. So you're going to see a lot of pats on the back. But the people that's at the arena ain't necessarily tweeting. You know, playoff tickets expensive, Gabe. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, typically the people who get to go for playoffs are like corporate.
Yeah. Types. Yeah. So, I mean, I'll be interested to see how some of those people ultimately feel about Korver and what he wrote. And one point I don't want to hammer, but I do want to make, because it is an important point, and this isn't Kyle Korver's fault, but there is an irony to the fact that Korver writes this piece that, like, spells out in details white privilege in a lot of ways. But the reason that people will pay attention to it is because of white privilege, which, to be clear, is a point that he is perfectly aware of. But we have to appreciate the irony of that fact. Like, he said a lot of stuff in there that I've been saying forever. But you ain't gonna listen to me, you're gonna listen to him. And that's why cats like him are important. Like, the idea, and we talked about this a little bit, and again, not to hammer, but when Scott Van Pelt did the thing about Izzo and was like, you know, don't be offended by things that don't concern you. If Kyle Korver took that attitude, he ain't writing this. You know what I mean? Like this matters. Like, this is a crucial thing in this respect. The other thing, though, is I see a lot of people, it got a lot of retweet, a lot of I was very moved, a lot of attaboy, Kyle, we need to hear more things like that. Then what? Because the thing about what Korver put in there is he was talking about stuff that anybody can do, you know, which is basically listen to what the people around you are saying. Anybody can do that. That's not that difficult if you just let yourself do it. You know, learn some history, like study race in America. And that's the hard part for people, because you're going to get to studying and you're going to be like, wait a minute, it's actually worse than I ever dreamed it was. Because that's what happens to every black person that studies on race. You're like, wow, this is real. Whoa, damn, I thought it was bad, but really? That's going to happen to you too. If you got the stomach for it, you can go ahead and do it. But these are things that you can do. Like, so like, if your thing about reading Kyle Korver's thing and talk about how moved you are, were, and then you don't do anything after the fact, you wasn't moved. Like, you ain't got to tell that lie. You can read it and be like, yo, this was really good, but you ain't got to tell the lies about it. You ain't impressing nobody at that point. When you going to get to the listening point? Like, that's important. That's big. But I don't want to take a single bit of credit away from them. They put the video on the Players Tribune with the players that was sitting there talking about it, although I did think it was interesting, and not that familiar with all those guys' backgrounds, and I'm not saying that their experiences are disqualified in any way, but Gabe, it was interesting that there was not a single African American on the panel. All the black dudes were kind of from other countries.
That is a good point.
It was George Yang, who one of his parents is Senegalese. I guess his father is Senegalese. Thabo Sefolosha, who's just not from the United States, but he's Swiss, and I think his people are from Cameroon, I think. And Ekpe Udo. So, I mean, that was an interesting observation. The other part of it, Pablo jokes about this. He's like Donovan Mitchell over on the side, like, no, guys, there is no racism in Utah. Please, free agents, don't listen to these men. There is no racism here. Please go play with me.
It's sad, man. It really is. Because, I mean, they are not a free agent destination. And this kind of tells the story, does it not?
They got Carlos Boozer at one time. I mean, they did.
Tell me how you really feel about Carlos Boozer right now.
This is how I like, we had Carlos Boozer on HQ once, and he totally charmed me. I really like Carlos Boozer. And he charmed me because we asked him about that time he painted his head, like he painted his hair. And he was so good about it, and he laughed so hard, and he told the whole story about, you know, the dude, they basically had, the dude told him a lie about the Beijing, you know? And so I really liked him. But when Carlos Boozer did that thing with the Cavs, what I've come to appreciate over the years is two things. One, there's one big reason why people were offended that Carlos Boozer did what he did. And you know what that reason is, right, Gabe?
Do tell.
Because the owner of the Cavs was blind. Like, I broke my word is one thing. I broke my word with this blind man. It just hits different. Am I wrong here? Like, there's something about deceiving a blind person that I think registers differently with people when they hear it. It offends them more. Gabe, it's okay. You're not nervous over it, are you? but that's a big thing. If he had done this to Jim Dolan, everybody would have understood. But he didn't, right? The other part is, have you ever looked at what the difference in money was?
I haven't.
It was big. I would have done the exact same thing. Sometimes people just got to be mad at you. And I recognize in looking at that situation that he was being asked to walk away from way too much money. And, I mean, you know it was dirty business because his agent didn't even take the commission on the contract. Do you know who his agent was?
I don't.
Rob Pelinka.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hadn't thought about it like that, had you?
Yeah, but I would not. I mean, I probably would have done the same thing. Except, I don't know. Yo, you know how bad you got to want to play at Utah to lie to a blind man to get there?
Oof.
Like, I feel like Utah needs to explain that to people. We had a dude who wanted to be here so bad that he did one of the most objectionable things most of you could think of. They trying to get people to come play in Utah. Kyle Korver calling the cameras from the Players Tribune because all of a sudden he all charged up and want to fix the world. Somebody with the Jazz is not pleased. Not pleased. I'd also like to make this point. It's kind of wild that the most poignant thing, and I say this as someone who didn't write anything himself, but the most poignant thing written so far about what's happened in Utah and what's going on around the league, how was that written by Kyle Korver? Like, how is nobody in our business, myself included, written something as good as that? That's kind of wild when you think about it. Because, yo, this is a big deal. Like, this matters. The NBA had the Tabo Cephalosha situation. They had the thing with Sterling Brown and dealing with the cops. Like, these issues surround this league. And apparently there's a level of dialogue going on amongst these players that's pretty noteworthy. Like, do you need anthem demonstrations to get to what's going on here? Because this is some real productive discussion that's going. And we as an industry, again, we deal well with flashpoints. We don't deal well with nuance. And as much as people who work in our business complain about the Players Tribune, if we got to go to them for the nuance, we don't have anything to complain about. We'll be back to talk about this NBA players poll in a minute, but first, Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free. While other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. There is no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data and place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections, such as 100 most popular. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving listeners of The Right Time with Bomani Jones a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up at righttime.robinhood.com. All right. The Athletic did one of my favorite things in our industry, and that is a player poll. That is where they give players anonymity and they answer a bunch of questions about the league. Gabe, did you have a chance to go over it?
Oh, I did.
All right. So some of these, I was a little surprised that James Harden is their MVP, 122 votes. And I'm going to tell you the number of votes so you notice that on some of these questions, some people didn't want to talk. So 122 votes for MVP. They got Harden, 44%. Giannis at 39%. I'm going Giannis. What about you?
I am completely torn on this one, as many are, because I love Harden and I love what he's doing. I love his game, but also too, at the same time, like what Giannis is doing just cannot be denied.
Yeah, I lean Giannis. I'm not mad either way, but I lean Giannis. They got Kawhi Leonard as the best defender. That sounds about right. They got Kyrie Irving as the best ball handler, and I don't even know how anybody else gets a vote. I think he might be the best ball handler of all time.
Really?
Yeah. It's nuts. It's nuts. Like Steph Curry is a good dribbler, don't get me wrong, but he ain't Kyrie. This was interesting to me. Starting a roster from scratch, who do you sign first? 36% of the league said Giannis. Second was Anthony Davis at 10%.
That is a gulf that is pretty wide. Where, what would you have said a year ago, and what would you say now?
A year ago, I would have said Anthony Davis, and I might still say Anthony Davis.
Okay, so you haven't wavered on that. Whereas it seems like, I mean, this is a player's poll, right?
Yeah.
So take into account that maybe GMs would say something different, but the fact that the players are saying that is pretty remarkable.
I agree, but I also think that polls like these tend to have some recency bias. Like, there tends to be wild, this and the GM polls, there'll be wild variations on this. Like, for example, no one here says Karl Towns, and a year or two ago, Karl Towns would have been all over this.
Yes.
You know, they change. Most overrated player, only 47 players voted for that. 125 answered about building from scratch. Only 47 players voted for most overrated. Tied at the top were Draymond Green and Russell Westbrook.
What I find funniest about this is that because less people voted for it, there's like a higher possibility that teammates may think that you're snitching on your own teammates.
Yes.
If you voted for it. So less people voted because, like, oh, I don't want it to come back to me in some way. But Draymond, number one.
But also, some of these are so like, who brought this guy up? Semi Ojeleye. Who thinks about him this much to put him in the poll as overrated? Miles Turner is in here. Like, Hassan Whiteside, I can understand how he gets there. Paul Millsap. Who voted for Paul Millsap? Who's overrating Paul Millsap? Are you overrating Paul Millsap?
That's kind of messed up, to be honest. I mean, like, Paul Millsap has been like a criminally underrated guy, and then he goes and signs a big deal with the Nuggets, and if anything, it's not like he's been bad. He's just been hurt.
Yeah, but who decided to
give the man a break?
Who decided to vote for him? Who hates Paul Millsap so much?
You should know about this. It's probably the ATL folks.
Maybe, but didn't he go to Utah first? Or is it Utah, then went to Atlanta?
Utah, Atlanta,
there we go.
Then Denver.
Anyway, still, that's so random.
Well, some haters in Utah, then.
That's, I mean, totally Ooh. Possible. Mm-hmm. Most underrated, 116 people voted for that versus the 47 who voted for overrated. Jrue Holiday, number one. I think Jrue Holiday is at that point where we've been calling him underrated so much that he's going to get overrated.
Yeah. Notably, though, Damian Lillard, number two on the list of most underrated, and also tied for number seven with Kawhi for you're building a roster from scratch. Who are you signing first? A strong, strong player opinion on Damian Lillard.
Yeah, and I feel like that is selling Kawhi Lillard way short and Damian Lillard way high.
I love Lillard, man. He's good.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to build a team around him, though.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know what he is? He's a guy that, like, I understand why he's your favorite player.
Why he's my favorite player?
No, not you, but just like a person. Like, if Dame Lillard is your favorite player, I get why he's your favorite player. But that don't mean I want to build a team around him.
Fair.
That kind of
undersized thing. Guard as well.
Yes. They asked who's the best player of all time. 73% said Michael Jordan.
More importantly, vastly more important.
But the 10.6% that voted for Kobe Bryant.
Number two and number three. So they got LeBron at two and Kobe at three. But the gulf between those two is far closer than one would think. And a win for the Kobe stands.
It is a win for the Kobe
11.9 stands. 11.9 to 10.6, so just a gulf of 1.3%.
Yeah, LeBron's still over him, but wow, Kobe got great marketing, man.
And AI gets a couple of votes here and there, and Kevin Durant.
I feel like whoever said Allen Iverson is the best player of all time, one, turns the ball over a lot, and two, must have all the tattoos. Because this is not about basketball, man. This is about a lifestyle.
thought for a second, oh, is this a player poll or is this a media poll? And then I thought, oh, did Stephen A. get a vote? That guy, he loves the AI.
Oh, yeah, they love each other. The player in the league you don't want to fight. Now, this is interesting because this question was phrased two ways. It was also, or just who's the toughest. James Johnson is number one at 43.8%, which means that the people who mentioned James Johnson, 105 people voted on this. The people who voted for James Johnson are people who don't want to fight James Johnson. Steven Adams was second place in the poll at 19%. And I feel like his is some hybrid of who's the toughest and who don't you want to fight. Because I don't want to fight Steven Adams because he's impervious to pain. I don't think guys are like they're afraid to fight Steven Adams. They just know it's maybe not a good idea. James Johnson, you know about James Johnson, right?
I do. I just wanted to hear you say it.
Oh, yeah, no. James Johnson know that hi-ya.
Oh, yeah, that is true.
He know that hi-ya. His mama and daddy and his siblings, they all know that hi-ya. James Johnson is something like a 20-0 in kickboxing. I can't remember if it's kickboxing or it's like the mixed hi-ya, but he knows all kind of hi-ya. And no, you don't want those problems. And we ain't really got no footage of James Johnson fighting anybody in the NBA because honestly, that would result in somebody dying. Like, he can't be out here scrapping with people.
Isn't James Johnson a Stay Ready All-Star?
Yes, yes, yes. That's because the hi-ya is like programmed into him. Like, you don't never lose your hi-ya. It's deep. We got the biggest trash talker in the NBA, Draymond Green, number one, Patrick Beverley, number two, Russell Westbrook, number three, Embiid, only 8.1% at number four. But did you see who came in tied for sixth? Gabe.
Your man.
That's right. Tied for sixth was Boogie Cousins and Joe Ingles. Joe Ingles out there talking noise to them boys.
A lot of Utah up in here.
Yeah, yeah. Here's the thing, though. Is it Joe Ingles talking that noise, or is it a fan using Joe Ingles to do it like ventriloquism?
Well, maybe these Aussie guys got a little mouth on them.
Yeah, well, they strike me as being ready to fight.
Yeah.
Like, in some places, like Boston, cats be ready to fight up there. I know, because they're ready to fight me. Is it, we got anything else on this poll that jumped out, I thought was
which coach, aside from your own, who would you want to play for? Number two, Brad Stevens. But there's a pretty wide gap between number two, Brad Stevens, at 10%, and number one, Greg Popovich, 40%.
Yeah, but people have a very high opinion of Stevens. Like, Isaiah Thomas loved Brad Stevens.
Sure, but when you have, like, a Boston coach like that, and you have so many Boston people in the media, it kind of feels like, to me, like, is he getting overhyped? Is he really that good?
I think that's fair, but I think guys really respect him. And that's the conclusion that I've reached from all the things that I've read and the people that I've talked to, is that his players respect him.
Number nine, though, on this list, tied for number nine, David Fizdale, who's had 1 year with the Knicks, where they've been tankapalooza, and then a half a season with the Grizzlies, and then he got fired?
Yeah, but don't forget that he was an assistant in Miami for a long time.
Sure. But this is like, who do you want to play for, like, as a head coach?
Right. But if you know him from then, and now he's head coaching, that could be a guy that you say.
I understand that. I'm just thinking it's interesting to hear, you know, a guy get love as a head coach when he hasn't really had the track record yet.
It just sounds like you're hating.
Well, I just think it's interesting. There's a lot of love.
Yeah.
A lot of love for him. A lot of love for Fizdale. People love them some Fizdale.
To be fair, this 2% is like 3 votes.
Yes, that's true.
That's fair. What I'm telling you. Like, all it takes is a couple of guys who are like, nah, that's my dude. I like him. I would like to play for him.
How about which number 11, which coach, aside from your own, would you not want to play for, aside from your own? So a little caveat here.
Yes, everybody's got Tom Thibodeau. Well, Tom Thibodeau and Boylan are taking more than 50% of the votes. And then that dude, Igor, I don't know nothing about him, but his name is Igor.
That's some hate, though. What has he done that bad? He's just being the Suns head coach?
Yeah, I think they're just hating on him because his name is Igor.
Yeah.
Igor sounds daunting. Oh, by the way, I forgot. In the guys you don't want to fight listing, also receiving votes, Ron Artest and Charles Oakley. There are people still so scared of these dudes that to this day they don't want to fight them, and they haven't been in the league for years.
Yeah, we got to get Ron Artest on the podcast. I think he'd be a good guest.
Yeah, I might have some similar to that to run by you.
Okay.
Stay tuned.
All right. Which team, other than your own, will win the NBA title this season? Number 12, with 79% of the vote, Golden State.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
how many haters out there?
Yeah. I mean, what else are they going to say? Because that's the problem. You got to pick somebody else. That's a hard one. And then they got who the best and the worst ref is. Y'all don't care who the best ref is. Tony Brothers, yes. Tony Brothers, Sky Foster, top two and worst refs.
Okay, but this part, I love it. Number four in the who is the worst ref, taking up 11% of the vote. All of them.
I know what DeMarcus Cousins voted for.
And what would that be?
All of them.
All of them. Yeah, DeMarcus Cousins, another hater. Number 15, where will Kevin Durant be playing next season? Where do you think he's going to be playing next season?
Oh, the Knicks.
60%, 63.3% of players, 109 votes, said the Knicks. Well, but actually, it does say, no, okay, so they're not the New York Nets, they're the Brooklyn Nets. I was thinking for a second, oh, can this be kind of like a double meaning there? But they're talking about the Knicks, 63%.
Oh, there it is. That was fun.
I think so. And for all the people that don't have subscription to The Athletic, I'm not going to tell you to go get a subscription to The Athletic because I don't work for The Athletic. You can just listen to this podcast,
yes,
and you can hear all the results of the poll, and you can laugh along with it.
The right time where we read The Athletic out loud. All right, we are going to pick up on our baseline series. We're talking about the Supermax extension in the NBA. We had Brian Windhorst of ESPN join us last week. This week we were scheduled to have Michelle Roberts of the NBA Players Association. She had to reschedule, but we were able to get in with us Bill Duffy, longtime NBA agent. He joined us to give us his perspective of the Supermax extension. This provision in the collective bargaining agreement, do you think it's something that has served players overall?
I believe it has, in the sense that it gives the players as much mobility as they've ever experienced. When the CBA reduced the length of maximum contracts, the players have taken advantage of that by doing shorter deals. You see 1-year deals, 2-year deals to optimize flexibility for themselves. So, and obviously, you know, there's the three thresholds in years of service. So you can get to the highest threshold and kind of manipulate that. So for the high end players, it absolutely has worked out. Obviously, there's a home field advantage because you can earn more from your original club that drafts you or the team that you're signed up with. So it'd be hard to argue that this hasn't worked out for the elite players.
Well, especially the guys that might be a step below elite, right? Because so many of the elite guys we see walking away from money to go to other places and others being like, oh, no, I'll take $40 million.
Well, they have the ability to make that up because, you know, Kevin Durant, I know he's danced around and done three one-year deals. And he knows he's always going to be maxed out. He knows there will always be provisions in the marketplace for him by virtue of his profile and stature. So, you know, and the way I look at it, you know, you're pretty much constricted fully through the first 5 years of your career. So it's only fair that you have that type of mobility from that point of your career on. And it's worked out, as I said, quite well.
Now, in your experience and knowledge of the game, has this changed tampering at all, the having this provision in place?
Well, you know, the whole tampering thing is just, you can't police that. You know, I think a lot about just the fact that these guys are just mega brands. They're together. They do stuff in the summer, so they kind of congregate. And then also, you know, the agents, we represent multiple stars. So just by virtue of just communicating with the teams on a regular basis, you know who has interest in whom. So there's just so much information out there. But, you know, you see these guys, you know, during the summer, like, hey, we should get together when our contracts come up. So you can't change that. It's just such a small ecosystem that there's so much, you know, communication and interaction among each other. So I, you know, that's going to continue.
Now, strategically for you as an agent, does the Supermax being in place change your strategy at all as how you go about negotiating contracts?
It does. It depends on the level of player. You want to make sure that, you know, the team's going to be able to have, you know, support around that player. You know, if you have two Supermax guys and then you deplete the talent around the player, then the player may not be happy despite the fact that they're getting paid. Because at the end of the day, you know, everybody wants to win. So to accomplish both of those, it does provide some type of ingenuity. But I do know that the first and foremost, a player wants to get his first paycheck. And once they get their first paycheck, and they're a little more flexible in terms of what they're looking for.
I think you pointed to something interesting, too, which is that the money is certainly great, but losing makes them all miserable.
Well, it's so funny, Bomani, because, you know, and we have a couple, you know, high profile free agents this summer. And, you know, we're obviously looking for their money, but I'm always reminding them, like, look, you know, be careful what you ask for. So, you know, you'll be happy on the 1st and the 15th, but you might be miserable otherwise. So the coach, the environment, the team, the culture, you have to always keep that in consideration in the long run, and especially if it's a second contract, because if a player's not in a favorable situation, it may hinder their third contract. So I look at it as kind of a stepping stone where you want to make sure you keep progressing in every aspect, you know, each from contract to contract to contract.
Now, this might sound crazy to some people because we're talking about guys making upwards of $40 million a year, but are the high-level guys in the NBA truly being paid what their value is to their franchise?
No, no. To me, you could arguably pay Steph Curry and LeBron James $300 million each, and that would be fair. And I live here in the Bay Area, and I watched what Steph Curry has done, you know, in this particular region and just globally, because of the type of person he is and the type of presence he has and the demographics that he reaches, and LeBron just being just a superhero type. I mean, you can put Kevin Durant in that category. You know, I don't represent these guys, but I respect the value they bring to the whole global dynamic of what is represented in the NBA and all the revenue that's generated, all the programming, all the social media, you know, the expansion in various global markets. It's all attributable to the stars. It's a box office business. And so you could say Michael Jordan, you could never pay him what his value was when he was playing, and he was underpaid his entire career. So I think your point, you know, is well taken.
You know, we talked to Brian Windhorst a couple of days ago about this, and one point that he made was that having a max contract then meant for a lot of teams that you had to give your best player a max deal, whether or not he was worth it, because that then became the expectation. So with the Supermax, are we experiencing kind of a similar thing there where guys want that specifically because it exists?
Absolutely. It's a representation of your profile, that you're an elite player. And typically those Supermaxes come with bonuses from making one of the three All-NBA teams or an All-Star team. So it could be upwards of another, you know, $40-50 million in their compensation. So yeah. No, the top guys, it's very important that they stamp themselves as a Supermax elite player.
Now, this summer, do you think that we as media are overstating just how crazy it could get with all these guys that are available this year?
Well, it's always chaotic, but you have four or five, you know, superstars that are free, and you also have mobility in the marketplace. 2 or 3 years ago, there were some pretty good players available, but there was stagnation in the market because teams didn't have cap space. But, you know, the league unilaterally tends to ramp up certain time frames, and this is one of them where they want to enter to the marketplace coinciding with these particular plays being free. So there's probably six or seven clubs that are going to be throwing out a bundle of money, and there's probably four players that, so it's kind of like musical chairs. So, and it's just one of those times, and there should be a carryover, so you'll see better contracts even for middle class players, and I think this is going to be a good summer.
Now, one thing that changed in this league also is that the rookie wage scale was put into effect. I guess it's now about over 20 years ago now that that was there. But the idea was that veterans would then get more money. In the NFL, they've done that, and the veterans haven't gotten the money. They just picked up more young guys. Has this helped veterans get their money in the NBA?
It hasn't. And in this particular, in our last CBA, rookie scale went up 45%. So they're still paying rookies aggressively. And probably the first five or six players who come in immediately and have impact, they're probably paid fairly. But when you got, you know, probably 15 guys in the first round who are making a pretty large sum of money when they haven't really earned it, there could be an argument there. But my position has always been that the veterans should get the lion's share of the money. The rookies should pay their dues. And once they earn it, then they should have the fruits of their labor, and they will for a long period of time once they establish themselves.
You know, the NBA right now is in like a period of labor peace. We had the lockout, you know, going into the 2011-2012 season, but now everybody seems to be like pretty happy with each other. What do you think about just the overall state of things right now with the NBA and just, you know, where labor stands?
I think there's peace. I think it's because of both, you know, Adam Silver, who's just a dynamic leader, and Michelle Roberts, who's very engaged with the pulse of the players, and Adam and Michelle's cooperative relationship. I also think it's attributable to just the prosperity. You know, Bomani, I think basketball is slowly emerging as the most popular sport, certainly in North America, in my opinion. And I don't know that we can ever rival soccer, but it's just globally with all the influx of international players and social media and young kids of who follow every other sport. I have five kids, and my youngest kid, all he watches is these highlight tapes of all these players and dunks and moves. And I mean, it's just rapid, and it's just carried over. So And I go back to Steph Curry. Like, here's a guy who everybody loves, so everybody's enthused to watch him play. Older people, younger people, you know, people from all over the world. So just the game is watchable. It's creative. It's high spirited, and it's really a perfect time, and I hope it continues.
Now, what do you think is different about the way that Adam Silver has handled labor issues versus the David Stern era?
I wouldn't say David. David was magnificent. Obviously, he built a league from, you know, back in earlier eras where there were drug issues and there was racial issues with the audience and, you know, league support. I remember in college, as you probably recall, although you're probably younger than me, that we were watching the finals, you know, on late night TV at 11:30, tape delayed. So the way the business has grown is attributable to, you know, David Stern's vision, and Adam was with him at that time. Adam is just more the new way, whether it's inclusion of gambling or signage on jerseys or the whole globalization. And I had the good fortune of representing Yao Ming. And when the NBA realized what his potential was, they just stuck their roots deeply into China. And I know they're working on India. You know, things are materializing in Africa. So Adam's going to – his concept has always been to grow the pie. And Michelle understands that, and now the players have rights with some of the marketing, so there's just more of a partnership concept. So it's really working out well.
All right, that is Bill Duffy, NBA agent. My man, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Always, Bomani. Thank you.
We'll be back with If You Haven't Heard in a minute, but first, the average interest rate on credit card debt is over 18% APR. Whew, that is high. Have you looked at your interest rate lately? Refinance your high-interest credit card balances and save with a credit card consolidation loan from LightStream. Get a rate as low as 6.14% APR with AutoPay. The rate is fixed. It will never go up. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and there are no fees. Even get your money as soon as the day you apply. When you have good credit, you deserve great service and a low-interest fixed-rate loan from LightStream. That's lending uncomplicated. Want to save even more? My listeners get an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Bomani. LightStream.com/Bomani. Subject to credit approval, rate includes a 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Bomani for more information.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from music.
Hi, my name is Sam Sanders. I host the NPR podcast and radio show It's Been a Minute. The thing I've been obsessed with recently is the story of the Lil Nas X country trap song, Old Town Road. This song is a little bit of country, a little bit of rap, and it was released to the internet last December independently. Lil Nas X had no label at that time, but it took off after a bunch of young white kids across the country began to make weird, quirky, fun videos of themselves set to this song. It blew up so much on TikTok that it eventually ended up on country radio, where it became even a bigger hit there, so much so that it charted for 1 week on the Billboard Hot Country Singles chart. After that, though, the powers that be intervened, and they had Old Town Road yanked from the chart because they said it wasn't country enough. This raised a lot of questions, made a lot of people angry, and there were some concerns about whether or not these folks were being mean to this guy because he's black. And there are also questions about who gets to be the gatekeeper on what or what isn't country music. After all of that, there was another wrinkle. Country legend Billy Ray Cyrus went into the studio with Lil Nas X and recorded a remix with himself giving vocals for the track, I guess in hopes to prove that this song is actually country once you get Billy Ray on it. Both versions are a bop, but the whole ordeal leaves me asking many questions. One, you should unpack the Billboard chart's really weird history with race. They have been segregated for a long time, so much so that back in the day there was a chart called the Black Singles Chart, and it was just for the black songs. Secondly, there are some big questions about how country onboards new artists. Hip-hop is totally cool with kids coming from SoundCloud out of nowhere and making something big for themselves, but country is still ruled by these gatekeepers in Nashville, and it's pretty insular, which might explain some of the pushback Lil Nas X got. Thirdly, talk about the Yeehaw agenda and how country from the start was black and the banjo comes from Africa. Okay, I'm over 2 minutes. I'm so sorry. talk about all these things. Thank you for this show and for listening to me. Bye.
I don't give a damn what them country music people do with their charts or anything else, really. So I feel like I've been kind of left out of this. I don't need this internet fight. And I think I have not listened to the Billy Ray Cyrus version, but I heard the other version and I thought it was clown shoes. Like, if I was running a country music station, I would honestly hear that and be like, yo, you trying to make fun of us? Because it sounds like you trying to make fun of us. I would have had some real questions, because from the way it's been described, what was going on TikTok, Gabe, you correct me if I'm wrong here. It doesn't sound like the people that were running it was because they just thought the song was so dope. It just worked with jokes they were making. Am I wrong?
That is what I still cannot figure out, whether or not people just think it's so fire that they can't stop listening to it, or that it's just so perfect for every possible joke. I mean, I've been here for the jokes, and every single one of them is sensational. Like, please send us, like, your versions, because I think that they are hilarious, and I can't get enough of them. But I can't necessarily say if I think the song is any good. I don't necessarily, I'm not really into that sort of music.
Yeah, I mean, it is very much a trap beat, and then it sounds like some country is thrown on top of it. And yeah, I do think that there's a lot of just hateration, holleration coming from the country music world about what to do with this. And I don't blame them for being a little confused as to what to do with it. This guy, like, I think it's tripped people in all these different ways, because part of it is that, like, when the Taylor Swift stuff started going pop, they were still playing it on country music, you know, on country stations. Like, now all of a sudden you are drawing the line, and how do you draw the line, and what is and what is not. And all of that was there and all of that was present. I get it. Yeah. But man, I am sorry. This dude is not going to be the cause that I fight for. Man, Billy Ray Cyrus showed up in that studio. Gabe, I sent a tweet that said jumping on the wave is hereditary, right? Because, you know, Miley Cyrus, she'd be jumping on the wave.
Indeed.
Oh, boy. People were upset with me for saying that, and I'm here to tell you it was a multiracial coalition.
Really?
Yes, they were. I got this ain't itted all day long, and it was mad. I remember when Achy Breaky Heart came out. It was a big deal, but I'm from Texas, so I don't know if it, like, was it really that way everywhere, you know what I mean? But I know Prairie View's band used to play Achy Breaky Heart. Yeah, Achy Breaky Heart was a real big deal. And apparently he retained some fans, man, because the blacks for Billy Ray was firing me up, Jack. They were just, nah, he did that because he remembered how he was treated and he wanted to get that dude on the chart and da-da-da. And I'm like, oh, really? So that's what Billy Ray Cyrus just be doing in his free time, helping out black kids. And I'm not saying that he doesn't do that, but come on now. He absolutely gets something by putting his name on this cause and pushing it. I'm sure he wants to help in some way, but this is not like pure selflessness. I intimate that maybe, just maybe, he's got some self-interest in this, and they was coming for me. And then it was like, oh, this song is jamming. Y'all really think this jamming?
It's number one on the Billboard charts now.
Yeah.
Overall.
Right. Well, the Billboard charts are also weird because of the way they now deal with streaming and stuff like that. You know, like, I don't have much value for these charts anymore because they're so easily rigged in this way. But yeah, now this song is everywhere. And I feel like in 10 years, we're going to be looking at that like we looked at, like, Ice Ice Baby or anything else that we thought was hot for a couple of days. And then we look back like, yo, wow, we was on that for a couple of weeks, wasn't we?
Yeah, I feel like we need, like, a Spotify top chart or some other sort of relevant.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, everything is so easily manipulated, all those numbers. But yeah, no, I said that about Billy Ray Cyrus. People got hot. They were not here for me. And then, of course, you had people calling me a racist. I'm like, hey, man, I don't mind the idea of maintaining and curating what is and is not within your genre. Like, that doesn't bother me. I do think, and this has been a thing, and this gets lost also, as much as race is certainly a factor here, country has had these issues with people, with white dudes forever too. Like, maintaining the spirit and identity of what is or isn't country music is a decades long thing. Like, we're talking going back 50s, 60s when we start talking about these things. It just so happens right now it's a black dude who did it. But this is not something that just popped up now because all of a sudden a black dude is coming on the charts. No, they've always had difficulty figuring out what is or is not country, or what they want country to be. And it's controlled by a small enough number of people that have more sway than you will have in other places. They have the quote unquote control of the culture that fans of rap always say that they want to have, right? They got that locked down over there in Nashville. But I just can't believe that this has gotten all over the place. just everywhere. Like, this is a thing. And I'm like, maybe I'll go listen to the Billy Ray Cyrus because they say that one is slamming. But that original did not make me want to listen to any more. Hell no.
I'm really surprised that is the version that you haven't listened to.
No, because I'd heard about the controversy before the remix came out.
Yeah, that's true. But also, like, all of the, like, TikTok and stuff that's going on with social media at the moment, like, just currently over this past weekend, is the Billy Ray Cyrus version.
Yeah, but I'm not, I just looked at people with pictures and stuff. Like, I didn't, like, this, it got to be too big of a thing. I didn't really want no parts of it.
Yeah, well, like, your man Cortez has been, like, tweeting out a storm whenever it comes to Stephen A. Smith stuff.
Yes.
And he tweeted out this version that was Stephen A. And then I do believe that Stephen A. also shared it, either that or another version. But it was like Stephen A. walking down, like, at some sort of live show, that, you know, live first take, walking in between the crowd wearing a suit. And then once it swished and the trap beat dropped, then he was rocking the cowboy hat. And I was like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, boy.
All right, this next one comes from Animal Conservation.
This is Matt Zarrell with ABC News. According to South African park officials, a suspected poacher was hunting rhino when he was killed by an elephant and his body was soon after devoured by lions. The alleged poacher, who has not been identified, was traveling inside Kruger National Park, located in the northeastern part of the country, when he was attacked. Park officials said after the attack, the four other people who were traveling with the man called his family to report that he had been killed by an elephant while they were in the park. Authorities said the man's family quickly called a local ranger, Don English, who arranged a search party on both land and in the air to find the man's remains. After a day of searching provided no clues, English spoke with the other travelers who were with the suspected poacher. The park said they provided information that led to the man's body, which was located near the Crocodile Bridge inside the park. Officials said evidence at the site of the man's remains suggested a pride of lions had eaten the body, and the only pieces left at the scene were the skull and a pair of pants. Police are currently investigating the incident, and the others who traveled with the suspected poacher were taken into custody for illegally entering the park. South Africa is home to more than 80% of the world's population of rhinos, with poachers seeking to profit off their horns, which are worth thousands on the illegal trade market.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
I'm not, like, here for people dying, obviously, but, like, justice can't be served.
Occupational hazard, baby. Occupational hazard. Like, once you decide that this is the life you're going to live, once you decide that this is going to be what you do, he realized when he left the crib, there's a chance I might get eight. He got eight.
And all that was left was a pair of pants. This last story comes from Privacy and Health, and I want to take the listeners behind the curtain here for a second. When you get stories where there's only one source, generally other reporters, other writers don't want to comment on it, and I don't usually call people out, but I'm feeling like a hater today. My man Jennings Brown of Gizmodo did not get back to me for this story. So he's going on my list. I'm creating a physical list in the studio. My man Jennings Brown is never to be a guest on the right time. But there was a story about the ancestry testing company, Family Tree DNA, where they have said that it is their moral responsibility to give the FBI access to your DNA. And this is the DNA that they are taking so that they can discover your ancestral past. Like, oh, you know, are you 10% this? Are you 10% that? This is where your family's from, what have you. They have said that the company had partnered with the FBI and given the agency access to the genealogy database. Law enforcement's use of DNA databases has been widely known since last April when California officials revealed genealogy website information was instrumental in determining the identity of the Golden State Killer. Your thoughts, Bomani?
It's too late. Because even if you were too smart to send your DNA off, your family, not necessarily that smart.
That is a huge point.
I have a family member who's already done it.
Oh, boy. It's too late for you.
Yeah, it was too late. Doesn't matter.
It's too late for me, too. One of my aunts has done it.
For what? That's my thing. For what?
You know that, like, people in this country are always trying to be like, oh, I'm 10% this. Oh, I'm 10% that. So they can feel some type of special.
Yeah, but like, for what? And they just out here telling you anything. It's like going to the tattoo shop and getting one of them Chinese phrases. They telling you anything. We don't know.
That is a very fair point.
Idiot. My brother. He's not an idiot, but way to go. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our sponsors, Robinhood and Lightstream. Thanks to Bill Duffy for joining us in part two of our new series, Baseline, on the Supermax contract. Also, thank you to Sam Sanders of NPR. Check out his It's Been a Minute podcast. Check out what he says about Lil Nas X's Old Town Road remix. Also, thank you to Matt Zarrell of ABC. Check out his story on that stupid rhino poacher that met a... you know, fairly timely demise, depending on how you look at it. Be sure to check out the MediaCom show this week. She's doing a mock draft with my man Joel Anderson, plus a conversation with Washington Husky safety Taylor Rapp, who is Chinese-American. Ooh, somebody go tell Pablo about this. He's supposed to go early in the draft. Podcast is co-hosted by a dog. His name is Lenny. He takes a question named after Lenny Dykstra. All right, check us out at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater. And we'll talk to you in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.